Jim Elliott and four other missionaries were seeking to reach out to a fierce Ecuadorian tribe known as the Alcas when those same Indians turned on them. The shocking news of the deadly attack spread around the world, but Jim's widow, Elizabeth, surprised many when she and her young daughter, Valerie, lived there with the same tribe for 2 years, helping them learn about the love and forgiveness found in Jesus Christ. On Gateway to Joy, Elizabeth Elliott shares with you the lessons learned through that and many other events in her remarkable journey. Thanks for joining us for Gateway to Joy. Here's Elizabeth Elliott.
It is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Do not be afraid or dismayed. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliott, talking with you today on the subject of receiving criticism. In a book called The Duties of Parents by John Charles Ryle, R-Y-L-E, he says, "Suffer a word of exhortation from a minister about the right training of children. Believe me, the subject is one that should come home to every conscience and make everyone ask himself the question, am I, in this matter, doing all I can? It is a subject that concerns almost all. There is hardly a household that it does not touch. Parents, nurses, teachers, godfathers, godmothers, uncles, aunts, brothers, sisters, all have an interest in it. Few can be found, I think, who might not influence some parent in the management of his family or affect the training of some child by suggestion or advice. All of us, I suspect, can do something here, either directly or indirectly. And I wish to stir up all to bear this in remembrance. It is a subject, too, on which all concerned are in great danger of coming short of their duty. This is preeminently a point in which men can see the faults of their neighbors more clearly than their own. They will often bring up their children in the very path which they have denounced to their friends as unsafe. They will see motes in other men's families and overlook beams in their own. They will be quick-sighted as eagles in detecting mistakes abroad and yet blind as bats to fatal errors which are daily going on at home. They will be wise about their brother's house but foolish about their own flesh and blood. Here, if anywhere, we need to suspect our own judgment. This, too, you will do well to bear in mind. As a minister, I cannot help remarking that there is hardly any subject about which people seem so tenacious as they are about their children. I have sometimes been perfectly astonished at the slowness of sensible Christian parents to allow that their own children are in fault or deserve blame. There are not a few persons to whom I would far rather speak about their own sins than tell them their children had done anything wrong." That bears thinking about, doesn't it? Parents need to be willing to receive criticism. Now, we've got to be willing ourselves to receive criticism, and we also have to teach our children. There are two strong principles which are essential to teach children: firmness of will and quietness of mind. Nothing is more likely to disturb my quietness than criticism. How do I respond to criticism? I aim at quietness of mind, and if somebody criticizes me, my quietness seems to go. What kind of an example am I setting to my grandchildren? Am I teaching them firmness of will and quietness of mind? Am I willing to receive criticism? Am I teaching them to receive criticism in a gracious, quiet, and humble way? We can never be unbiased in our judgment of ourselves. We're strongly prejudiced, of course. We need correction and instruction from God, from His Word, and many of us are willing to take it from God and from His Word, or even from our own experience, but we're not always willing to take correction and instruction from other people. That's my subject today. Are you willing to receive criticism? Jesus came to give us a new nature, his own nature. But until we're prepared to look at ourselves from his vantage point, he can't give us his own nature. We have to be willing to compare ourselves, not with each other, but with Christ. The standard is perfection. And then ask God to help us to see ourselves as he sees us. I pray this, that God will open my eyes to my stubbornness, my prejudices, my fixed and firm notions that I don't want anybody to change. I ask God to renew my mind from within, to make me open to the criticisms that I receive in my mail, to make me willing to receive my husband's criticism. And he is my most severe critic. I don't always receive it graciously. But if I'm going to pray, Lord, search me and know me, try me and know my thoughts, see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting, it may be that the answer to that prayer is going to come through some other person, not directly by the Holy Spirit of God, not directly from his word, but from somebody who has a criticism, something I need to hear. It will be the answer to my prayer. When I make the decision that I want to be conformed to the image of Christ, and I determine to follow him, I better remember that I am immediately put under scrutiny. Sometimes we hear people say, it's not fair for non-Christians to expect so much of us Christians. After all, we're not perfect. Well, life isn't fair, but there is some justice there, you know, because Christians, although we're not perfect, are forgiven. And Christians have a source of supernatural help that nobody else has. And Christians profess to follow a master whose standard was perfection. Sometimes I think it's unfair for people to expect so much of me. And yet, God checks me and reminds me that he has put me in a position to be an example in a way that not everybody is in. What kind of an example am I setting? Of course I'm not perfect. Of course I'm not as wonderful as some people tell me they think I am. When they tell me that, I say, you pray that God will make me what you think I am. It is right and proper, not that we profess perfection, but others do have a right to look to us for an example. We must walk and talk and transact business in a way that honors him whom we profess to love. When I'm criticized, my instant automatic reaction is to criticize my critic. Now, how's that for a sin? That will do very nicely for a sin, won't it? Beware of looking to see where others come short. God expects us to be exactly what we know the other one should be. I think that bears repeating, and this is somebody else's quotation. It's Oswald Chambers, in fact. God expects us to be exactly what we know the other one should be. When we know that, we'll stop criticizing and having a measuring rod for other people. Oh, isn't it easy? Isn't it easy to criticize the critic, to look to see where other people are coming short? Well, as soon as I see where the other person comes short, then God is putting his finger on my conscience and saying, that is exactly where you are coming short. As Paul said, when we judge others, it's usually because we are in need of that very same judgment ourselves. We're doing the same things ourselves that we're so quick to see and to criticize in other people. Let me read that passage in Numbers 20. There was no water for the community, so they gathered against Moses and Aaron. The people disputed with Moses and said, "If only we had perished when our brothers perished in the presence of the Lord, why have you brought the assembly of the Lord into this wilderness for us and our beasts to die here? Why did you fetch us up from Egypt to bring us to this vile place where nothing grows, neither corn nor figs, vines or pomegranates? There is not even any water to drink." Now note Moses' response. Moses and Aaron came forward in front of the assembly to the entrance of the tent of the presence. There they fell prostrate, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. And then you remember that God told Moses how he could provide the water that the children of Israel really did need. But what impresses me is that this severe and very unjust criticism of Moses was responded to not with anger, not with his criticizing his critics, but with his prostrating himself at the entrance to the tent of the presence. Shouldn't that be a lesson for all of us? When we're criticized, let's prostrate ourselves before the Lord. Ask him for his mind on the subject. Correction, says Proverbs 10:17, is the high road to life. What is my opportunity in the present circumstance to know the Lord? Am I prepared to humble myself under the mighty hand of God? May he give us grace to receive criticism and to receive it graciously.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Discipline, The Glad Surrender, and No Graven Image. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.